Be careful, you're going to crack the table. If you break it, you have to buy it.
Exactly. You own it.
Oh, I
will.
They are. Despite you. Okay. Despite you, we still talk.
Are we on?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I haven't.
Well, come on to the meeting.
I'll get your check. Okay.
Put them on.
Thank you.
But you can email me the letter, just like to say.
Well, I really
appreciate it. Okay. Call on to the meeting of the Legislation Committee. It's about 1:40. We're not that late. And we are joined by legislators Burton, Harper, Majowski, Chairman Jenkins, Burroughs, Williams, Alfreda, Pinto, and Myers. Pretty good forum. You have two items on the agenda. One is a proposal to enact a local law regarding eminent domain. The proponents of that law, the sponsors, legislators Mezzano, Arminati, are not in the room, so we will hold off on that, and hopefully they will arrive in time to discuss it. But before that, we'll take up something we discussed last week, but turns out that what we were considering last week was not the proposed law that should have been amended. This was a proposed amendment to the Compensation Advisory Board. And the county attorney, who is not represented here, and should be, drafted a proposal that we considered last week that simply made it purely discretionary, and that was not the intent. What they were supposed to do is draft a law that basically provided if the legislators, Board of Legislators, were considering a change in compensation, then the advisory board would have to be established. And the idea was, if there's no consideration of any change in compensation, why convene a board for no reason at all? Because I think we all can agree they're not going to, on their own, suggest that or recommend an increase in compensation.
Well, we didn't know that.
But
we were considering a change in compensation. We did ask them to opine,
but I don't think we had anything on the table.
Yes, we did. We had increases in stipends.
Yeah, which are constant the whole thing.
That's how we started.
So the chair, this is basically the chair's proposal, so I'll turn the floor over to Chairman.
Peter, can you?
Thank you, Chairman. And I appreciate the clarification. That was the intent, as you stated, was to change the current law, the current act, from where it is required every even numbered year to impanel a compensation in that advisory board, and they are to have a report by, I guess, the end of April or the
April
end of March.
30,
April 30.
They can be appointed by March 31st, and they have to have
they have a report that's due by
April
30th. So it was a requirement for me as chairman to impanel this board, although it was clear, and I understand clearly, that there was no consideration for any compensation modifications at hand. And so therefore I asked the legislation committee to determine and to understand whether or not we could have a modification in the law that would impanel this group should that decision be raised by the Board of Legislators. So I appreciate the consideration for this. Otherwise, I would have to, based on the current law, I'd have to name a committee, although we were not going to use any of their effort at all. So I believe that it is in the spirit of making sure that we are using our volunteers' time appropriately. We know that there's not going to be any compensation modifications enacted for the Board of Legislators. So this is why I asked for this particular thing to be done. Again, otherwise I would be forced to name a committee that would meet and to have a report that would go nowhere. I also noted, and the county attorney did note in their past committee, in the committee report that they had developed, that out of the last three compensation advisory boards reports, none of the information was utilized in total. Maybe there may have been pieces that have been used, but basically the work of this volunteer group was essentially not utilized. So that is what I'm asking for consideration, which is basically to change the law 570.02 to permit the compensation advisory report when there's a consideration for that from the Board of Legislators.
So in other words, Mr. Chairman, we're looking at deleting the underline and inserting the bracketed, and that would be sufficient?
No, including putting in the underline and deleting the bracket.
Putting in this. Instead of, it had read, their shop.
And also gives them a little more time to appoint and for them to give their recommendation.
So this would be invoked at any time.
Well, I thought that the requirement was there shall be, and the underlined sentence says shall first establish, and then it's the brackets, the compensation advisory board is hereby created to make them.
No, because it's upon considering a change to the compensation of its members.
In the in the second key, section,
right. That's the key clause.
Yes.
Considering it.
In section two, Mr. Chair,
they shall be appointed at any time right. by July 1st.
Right. So the modification is that on section two, where it says the Board of Legislators, upon considering a change to the compensation of its members, shall first establish. That is different from what the requirement was, which is there shall be. And we did have an opinion from the county attorney that from counsel of this committee that was reminding that in the current charter that it is a requirement to form this particular compensation advisory board. So that's the change.
Do you want a motion?
Well, any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman. I think, notwithstanding our discussion last week, I think, I think the intent is where we're heading. Just maybe some drafting items. And I was just checking the committee in the first by 570.01, where we'll first establish this board to make an unbiased recommendation. I mean, if it says to make a recommendation, I don't know, in writing legislation to say to make an unbiased, I mean,
But I think that's in the current.
You're saying take out the word unbiased.
Presumed.
Yeah.
We're legislating an unbiased recommendation as opposed to make a biased. It's purely drafted.
I agree.
But I
have no problem with that.
To make a recommendation,
so
we will assume that it's unbiased.
Put that in brackets.
Yeah.
Too.
And I had a little trouble, trying to find the trigger. I have a little problem, but I guess I can live with it.
Word consideration.
Well, when considering a change, I'm not sure. But when you go to paragraph 2, first it says upon considering. It's, you always like to be even, but I would like to make a suggestion that rather than repeat that, because I have enough trouble.
Section two.
Well, in section one, it talks about the underlying language.
When considering.
Right. The trigger is
one, it says
when considering.
Yeah.
Well, the problem. I guess I can live with that, but in section two. Rather than sort of repeating it with the word upon considering, I think it works if we skip the first sentence and simply say, so section 2 will say, one, if a compensation advisory board established pursuant to section 570.01, the members support.
Okay.
The problem I have with that is section 570.01 simply states the purpose.
It's the purpose. I understand it's the purpose clause.
So that actually legislates when you will.
Well, but it's in section 01, so if we say if the board is established pursuant to 01, otherwise you're repeating that triggering. I mean, either
what's
take
wrong
it,
with repeating it?
Well, first of all, if you repeat it, it's upon considering as opposed to when considering.
Just delete the whole idea.
I think delete the whole sentence. This is drafting legislation. You can say
if
established pursuant to section 570.01, because that trigger, when considering. I mean, one could debate, is it one legislator considering, is it the chairman?
Well, I think the...
And then you get the immediate...
The question
side.
Is the trigger.
The trigger.
What causes this to be done? If the chairman proposes, if I propose, or Vito proposes, or if somebody in the public proposes, what triggers this to be created? What causes this to be...
Welcome,
voted?
Legislator. Mr.
Yeah. Hello, we're drafting as with the Board of Legislators.
And I don't know the answer to that, right. Because when you think about it... Unless and until somebody puts something in the hopper, somebody with standing puts something in the hopper,
Well, you don't have.
Bill, that's why I said I had some problem with the language. It's a little vague. It says the board of legislators when considered.
Right.
So it's a little vague.
Right.
Open it, but when considered, the board of legislators is that. Let's be honest. Is that a caucus? Is it a vote of the 17? Well, but it's the board. It's the board when considering.
Right.
The committee report maybe can flesh out. But again, if there's a better, someone's better language than when considering, I'd entertain it.
The attorney is not here.
They
yeah.
called me on Friday. They were coming.
Yeah.
So
when considering, but I'd rather avoid repeating it. It's bad enough to say it once. I don't want to repeat it in section two.
Well, would you rather have just a standing compensation advisory board?
That's what they should have.
No, this shall be established. If
Well, to Vito's point, I could support creating this board. You know, this way, before July, you create it, and then it's just there. In theory, though, if it's dissolved, it may not come back for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And if it does, presume people on the board could go back and first see if those who did serve prior are still around. You like people who had some expertise.
You want to have
expertise.
Yeah, that sounds like it would make that the rules would maybe be the trigger, because you're looking for a trigger.
Well, yeah. Right. The first question is the trigger.
Right.
Well,
I think you're looking for a trigger that doesn't have the Board of Legislators' fingerprints all over.
Right.
That's what you're looking for. You're looking for something that is just out there that happens automatically, independent of us.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is. For those who are looking for something where our fingerprints aren't on it, that's what most places will do. And how do they accomplish it? They have something that operates under the law that creates a compensation advisory committee, or some have opted to go a different road. They have something that operates in the law that just automatically does certain things to the salary of legislators. They've chosen different alternatives, but they do it so the fingerprints, the pulling of the trigger, is not done by the legislative body.
I don't understand. Can I just ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead. I just want to put it right here.
It seems to me that generally the a change in compensation begins with the Board of Legislators. If the board wants to change it, it doesn't come from some citizen saying, we'd like you to raise your salary.
Wow.
It comes from the board.
Right, yeah.
It doesn't come from upstairs.
Right.
It comes from here.
Yeah, but you have to look at the reality of it. It can come from here, but then we've seen, I mean, recent history, there's been a big problem with the group staying with the fact that something has to be reviewed. The outside pressure, the real world, when people start to talk about What are you doing? What are you bringing up salaries for? All of a sudden, everyone runs. Well, not me. It was the others that wanted to do that, and so it eliminates that too. It is something that would automatically happen, where people could actually say, "I did not raise the issue of salaries." It comes up every 2 years, every 5 years, automatically under the law. It is just reviewed.
All right. So you're disagreeing with this approach. Just so we're clear.
Well, what I'm saying is this continues to put it on us. When the legislature decides that we need a raise, then we will activate a compensation. It's changing from a strict timetable of every even year to whenever it happens to come up. But it doesn't remove one very big problem, which this majority has to understand has been a problem for it, that we, in fact, are the ones that are initiating the discussion about increasing salary. We are the ones who are looking to increase salary. And whether it's the old way or the change, it still stays with us. And what I'm saying is there was an alternative where you could say it's not initiated by the current board majority. It's something that's in the law that takes place with regularity all the time.
Yeah, I'll let you understand.
I was not a member, but I was around for the 2005 increase, which came after the election, during the budget process. The board was the subject of a week's worth of front page stories, pictures of every member of the board with their home address and home telephone numbers were printed by the Journal News on the front page. And it was still voted through, but it was obviously a very difficult thing. for all the members, pro or con. I think that, I'm channeling without his permission, but I'm channeling George Latimer on this. I think that the reason he, I believe this was his initiative, came up with this.
This came out of a big group discussion.
Was to do exactly what is being suggested, is to create an automatic discussion of this subject every 2 years.
Well, that's what you have now.
Right, I'm saying, it does create that. And, yeah. I don't see anything wrong with that. It is, after all, not permitted, if it's done in April of 2010, such action could, whenever it was conducted, would not have effect until after the following election in 2011, to take effect on January 1st, 2012, or whenever the legislation so stated. Mm-hmm. I don't see what's wrong with it. Whether we choose to not simply fail to impanel it, which would, I'm not sure what the total effect would be if we simply chose to not impanel it, because we hadn't impaneled it since Lord knows when, up until last year. What is the effect of it? If we, on the other hand, did actually invoke it and led to a discussion such as we had last year, where Mr. Mooney and the other members of the panel recommended that this board be, its compensation go up by, I think it was 10%, and then took off 7%. On a couple of other matters and came up with the idea of a central administrative structure and a couple of other things, which wasn't, I don't think, in the charge you had given them. But
not at all.
They did it anyway.
Yeah.
I'm not altogether sure that's the worst thing in the world. So I think I've come to the conclusion that this legislation is good in as far as it goes. I would like to see it, in fact, be more proactive and require that it be established, and that it require it to give a report. It can then sit or not. I realize that what would happen is that there would be people out there asking us to sign no raise pledges during the following campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I fully understand, but it also can be done without this sort of thing being out there. We can all be asked to sign no raise pledges. But this, I think, puts it out in the public area early on and can get it discussed. And that's I think it's a sole advantage, but I think it's a terrific advantage.
Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only concern in this is that, one is that the particular report is advisory, right, from its nature. And as opposed to saying suggesting that the time frame causes a review, and that review will end up with a report, that report as an advisory opinion, when before we even impaneled this panel, we would know that there was no consideration, there would be no feeling on this board to enact any sort of compensation modification. Why would we do that? And since it's the law, the way that it's written, as shall, that, you know, we need to modify that particular aspect. I certainly understand and respect the scenarios which we have all found ourselves in, which is that as legislators, in recommending our own pay raises is never a good scenario. That's why the people in Albany haven't changed theirs in X amount of period of time. But given our current environment, it seems to me that simply impaneling the group would cause the same level of anger and angst as there would be to not having the group impaneled at all. So the suggestion that I was making was that, again, in the way that the language has been modified, that says, should there be a consideration for doing that? And that's a trigger question, and I understand that. Is it the time, you know, every 2 years? Is it, you know, a separate group of people? Is it the rules committee that says, you know, we would like to have this group impaneled to do this consideration? It doesn't say what that's going to end up being. It certainly is just the trigger, right? And if that would be a satisfactory solution, certainly I would be amenable to doing that for the trigger to start the process. But the reality is that there was no consideration in my mind for even impaneling this group of people in our current environment. It just wasn't going to make sense. So as opposed to violating our own laws, which we kind of try not to do, the recommendation is to modify it in a way that would
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question through the chair, if I may. Mr. Chair, to that point about not violating our own laws, I'm just curious, what is the penalty in the existing law were you to not impanel this group?
There is no penalty. It's just we just don't file. We're just not following the law. And in our current environment, where we are challenging the authority of the county executive based on the law, we can't pick the laws that we want to follow. And that's really what it comes down to. We can't say, you know what, if you're the county executive, you can't, you know, make modifications in the appropriations because the law says so, and then say, oh, this law here, we don't like this one, so we're just going to ignore it. So that's where really what it comes down to, is a matter of consistency. And again, I certainly understand. I was here the last time we had this discussion, and, you know, with the impanelment, or which led to the impanelment of the Compensation Advisory Board at the end. It is not a good discussion. It's just not, right? And I don't see that discussion getting any more pleasant in the short term and near future. So I think that, you know, again, the concerns about the trigger, making it an optional for the panel to be named. It's an advisory panel in the first place. So you have this group of people, as Mr. Burke just suggested, that recommended a raise for the legislators in the last advisory report. We all still signed the letter and said we're not going to do it. Right? So I'm just for me, from a matter of consistency, from following the law, you know, that should be the case. I mean, if that's the case, we should just repeal the law.
Yes, I maybe have a compromise, Mr. Chairman. I think the chairman, you know, makes a valid point. We have a law on the books. We don't want to violate it, so we sort of need to deal with that. So that's on the table. If you step back, and to Mr. Ryan's point, how it's done, when it's done, Congress, for example, you know, looked at this, it just made it automatic every year, the CPI. Did that 8-10 years ago, you don't see the papers anymore. It's just done, and there's no protest, it's just done. So even setting up a committee, our compensation board last time, after 4 or 5 months, came back and said CPI, and as a practical matter, every year, every 2 years, you almost wouldn't have to set up a committee because anyone's going to recommend anything, they're probably going to say CPI. Why don't we have sort of compromise to get around this trigger? We amend the law now, certainly to solve this problem, and the law, the law can be somewhat the, you know, however, for 2010, you know, we find we don't need to set up this committee. I'm just going for the language. But leave on the books, starting in 2012, that same language every even year. So come 2 years from now, if we did nothing, it will trigger automatically. Just as we're doing now, it's going to trigger automatically unless we pass some slight amendment, just add some laws, you know, postponing it this year. 2 years from now, it'll come up automatically. And without anyone trying to say anything, it'll just, the chair will have to pick that panel unless we sort of stop them and say, no, we'll delay it for another 2 years. And just kind of, so keep the trigger in the law of every even year, and then we can decide just not to move forward, as opposed to trying to positively create a trigger. You know, because, how, when, where we could try to keep the trigger. So we have on the books the intent that was set up years ago. No one needs to create that trigger. It's just going to happen. But maybe we have like a failsafe. Well, in the January, February, March of that even number year, we say, you know what, going to postpone another 2 years. Or let it go, and they may come back with zero, whatever they come back with. But if we ever want to move forward with some board 5, 10, 15 years from now, unless you have an automatic trigger in there, you're right, it may never happen. So it's sort of a compromise. Pass it, skip it for this year, but keep that automatic trigger on the books to be revisited every 2 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having been here long enough to know that we never raise our pay, we ought to just leave this alone.
How do we do?
Or just abolish it completely. Because we will never affirmatively move forward and set up a committee. When I first came on the board, the people who were in charge had a system so that legislators could actually earn their pay. You get paid for the days on which you came to meetings. The first year I was here, I had a committee meeting every day of the week. And I literally made more money then than I did than a regular starting legislator does today, or about the same, roughly the same. So this legislature is going backwards, and you know we're cutting the pay of legislators as the CPI goes up. It seems to me, we also had at one point a proposal which we adopted that there would be was it a CPI increase or was it the same that CSEA got? Whatever it was an automatic pay raise. Huh. And then in the guise of good government, the same kind of discussion here, well, we don't want to talk about our pay, we don't want to let anything happen, we did away with that. So what I've learned is legislators will never get a pay raise, they will never talk about their own pay, and even if the economy turns around and CSEA gets a 5% pay raise for every year thereafter, there'll be some excuse as to why we shouldn't be talking about pay raise. And I think that's wrong, because in the eyes of the public, you're diminishing your position. You're saying you're not worth anything. And I understand how difficult it is to go forward and talk about why you should get paid. But I really think that, you know, we really should value this job and value it properly. And say to people, all right, we're not going to talk about it. We've got some other group out there that's going to talk about it. Now, where does that leave us from this? I think that, one, I would prefer to just see leave it alone. Appoint a commission this year. Let the commission come back and say, the recommendations from last time were fine, and then we could all say, you know what, these are bad times, we're not going to take it, and be done with. Secondly, I like Mr. Rogowski's as a backup proposal. I was thinking something along the same lines. You just put something in the law that says, except this law shall not apply in the year 2010. But I would hate to see us abolish this whole thing, unless we're going to substitute an automatic CPI raise starting in the year 2012 or something like that. Because otherwise, you're just saying that this job isn't, you know, you're feeding the people out there who are saying you guys aren't worth anything, you know, and do away with county government and all of that stuff. You got to say the job is worth something, and not everybody can afford to be here for nothing. Not everybody can afford to be here. Some people have to take this as a full-time job. I mean, some of us, you know, are in positions where we can do something else. But there are not a lot of jobs out in the world where you could split yourself between doing this, which takes an awful lot of time, and doing something else. I mean, think about the types of jobs that are out there. People who work for businesses and whatever. They're really limited in coming here because of the pay. So I guess I'm rambling on, I'm sorry. But I do think that this has been a sore point for 20 years. Everybody has had, you know, legislators are so afraid to talk about it. And as you said, witness the guys in Albany, they haven't talked about it. And the end result is judges haven't had raises and whatever. So there's this image that government people get paid so much, when in fact, in many circumstances, when you compare what's being done, I mean, the corporation, the executives of major corporations for showing up a couple of times a year at Gannett, I think we checked it one time. They make more than we do, and they show up, what, 4 times a year? And they get paid as much as we do, and we're here day in and day out. So I would argue that we just leave it alone. I would like to just appoint this commission this year. We just make sure we appoint a commission that comes back and says, okay, guys, you deserve a raise, but because of the times, you shouldn't have it this year.
They might come back and say you should reduce your compensation.
Well, that could happen.
We should have them do pre-judgment before we appoint them.
Is it really to say that? I think you really pick honest people. We're going
honest
to
people are going to come back and say right. What you just said.
Any consensus? Yes. I mean, we have three possibilities on the table. The proposal that's before us, doing nothing, or the Rogowski corollary, which is to suspend it for this year. Yes, sir.
I would like to speak about the whole thing.
You speak about whatever you want.
I think if you're going to have a compensation advisory board, it's much similar to a police advisory board and everything else, you ought to establish it, put 5 people on, beginning terms of 3, 2, and 1, and then have them go to the complete terms thereafter, their first initial appointment, and just say that they can come in.
That might be the best suggestion.
And then come in and leave it up to them and the even years to make recommendations that would go to the public before the election of the new coming board.
So you establish as a standing committee.
Establish it as a standing committee, 5, beginning with 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 terms, and thereafter reappointment would be 5-year terms, and filled it with 3 people from the public and expertise in the field, 1 person from whomever else, and one from another person, and just do it. Well, thank you very much, folks. I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman,
it also makes it easier that it doesn't put the onus on.
Then it doesn't put the onus on somebody establishing it, whether you shall, you may, pick and choose, and if they come up and say that it should be a cost of living or addressed to the CPI, then they do it. You accept it, you put it on prior to the next election on the odd year, and it's done with, whether people run again or don't run again. And and it would also go to benefits, as it says probably right now.
As Tom pointed out, I mean, this has been a problem for ages, and it's not unique to the Westchester Board. No matter who you talk to, you're going to find that increases in pay and taxes always create a problem. And so, in a different time, a different economy, prior to the dust getting kicked up over the whole issue of county government and the need for it, like I say, just a very, very different time, this legislature dealt with a couple of realities. The first was that as much as we would like to give it to somebody else, we couldn't. It is our responsibility to fix the level of compensation for the officers of this county. That's what it is. And the other thing that we concluded at the time was there needed to be something in place that would ensure that an appropriate level of compensation was being paid to the members of the Board of Legislators. And at the time, everybody agreed with that. That is something that was very, very important. So we have the responsibility, and we also concluded as a legislature that to ensure an appropriate level of compensation would be there, you had to take an action. So the action that was taken was to kind of take a lot of the thought decision making out of our hands, yes and no, because it's just advisory. This panel was to be set up. And so it would work for 4 months, it would deliver recommendations, we would act on them, and they would take effect maybe in the subsequent fiscal year. So there you had it. Then what happens? What happens is a change in the climate, and in a way where the angry people out there who don't want to hear of anything like this now pretty much determine what the agenda will be when it comes to the compensation of employees and officers of Westchester County. And basically the message is nobody wants to hear it. Nothing. If anything, decrease the level of compensation. To Vito's point about establishing something that can be permanent and develop some expertise, let me be quite frank. The last compensation advisory board that we created, a number of us were interviewed by them, some not just once, perhaps twice, and we pretty much concluded that this was a group that knew very little about what county government was, what it did, what the officers of county government were responsible for, had practically no understanding of what the Board of Legislators did, collectively, individually as legislators, what the leadership did, zero. And so, in 4 months, delivered back to us a one-page recommendation for their statement as to what this board was worth, considering the important charge that they had under the law, a one-page statement, and all of our materials to help them understand what this was all about, returned to us with the cellophane not even broken. And so, good thing it was advisory, because many of us didn't really feel that the proper job had been done by them. They were put into place. 4 months later, they're out of business. Mr. Pinto's point about maybe we should establish something that is long-term in nature, sits and functions, functions along the lines of some of our more permanent boards. Maybe that's the way to go. It removes further all of the news that surrounds the actions that are taken to, even if it's under the law, because the law requires it, to install a new board. And and people are going to write and they're going to report on that kind of thing. So that even removes further. What does it do? It still acknowledges the fact that, because the recommendation comes back to us, that we have the ultimate authority to make those changes in the levels of compensation. And two, we still have not given up on the fact that people in government, whether they're officers, employees, have to be compensated at an appropriate level. And this helps ensure that that will take place.
So you're in favor of what Mr. Pinto says?
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right, there's another feature in the draft that's in front of you that is sort of being ignored as well, which is that in the time frames in it says that it's the July time frame in either year. So one of the concerns and one of the expressions that we heard from the public clearly on these things was the modification of pay after a certain particular period of time, right? So, you know, after elections, and then you would have what they would call a pay grab, right, kind of scenario. This particular legislation, the way that it was drafted, and I won't take credit for it because it wasn't a suggestion from me, that they put in that the reporting had to be done, you know, or the period they could be configured was in, you know, July, no later than July of that year. So whether it's this year or next year. So it kind of goes towards the point that Ms. Pinto was bringing up as far as having a panel that is in place all the time, but it also gave the short time frame window because it's a specific task that they would have to do as opposed to have it continually be in place. So it kind of takes the trigger point away that, you know, that we have a concern with. But the time frame is also important because having them have a report for April of 2011 for effect that would be in 2012 as far as a recommendation that could be totally ignored by the Board of Legislators, this particular proposal changes that piece. It says that should there be consideration of a change in compensation, then this panel would be impaneled, and they would have to be impaneled by July of that year. So again, I'm still leaning towards the fact that we have to modify this thing, period, right? And whether we do it for this year, that's fine. But I think that we have to get to a place where we have some triggers that could make sense. But we also are taking into consideration the taxpayers' viewpoint, which is, you know, that they have significant questions about that. And you were being, I think you were being semi-facetious about it, that said the Compensation Advisory Panel might recommend a decrease in our current environment right now. They don't think any of us should get paid, right? You know, so I'm not sure that that's the right thing as well. There's no scenario that I see that impaneling this position, this committee, even at this moment in time, that it will not be written, it will not be said that we are seeking a pay raise. I just don't see that scenario, right?
I would go with the Pinto plan. I'll tell you why. And kind of what Bill was getting at. I never really liked this throwing this thing together all of a sudden to deal with a particular pay raise proposal. Because as Bill was laying, that gets into the center of the press and becomes this big thing. Having a standing committee of people that will look at this regularly over the long term, that Bill pointed out how we kind of threw these people together at the last minute. None of them really knew the county government. We get around that a little by having a permanent standing committee over 2 years. That's the, while I understand Ken's point, the same token, why don't we just make this an official committee? This is their job over 2 years or 4 years. I don't care. You guys pick the term. But I never liked this 4 month, throw it together, let them come out with a response. It just generated too much problem in the media as far as I'm concerned. I'd rather just have this a standing committee, and over the long term, they'll consider whether we should get a raise or decrease or whatever. I like the Pinto approach.
I was just working on some numbers here. Can I request that we ask the county attorney to give us a draft of this to see how it looks? I would suggest 4 years because I can work it out that way, that the chairman's three appointments, he could appoint for 3 years, 4 years, 3 years, and 1 year. The majority leader could be 4 and 2, minority leader 3 and 2. It works out so you have two people to appoint every year, and so, you know, it's a
two
rotating.
Two people would come up for
every year, and it would kind of work out, and also at any rate. So I would suggest 4 years. And,
yeah. Oh, thanks, Mr. Chair. After having heard everybody, you know, they're valid points to all of this, but I, at the end of it, I get back to the proposal that's before us. To Ken's point, even the mere mention of a compensation committee, 2 years, 4 years, permanent, semi-permanent, we're going to get slapped. And none of us want to talk about compensation. So why would we impanel something, even for 2 or 4 or 6 years, when we're going to get slapped for it? Why don't You know, it just seems to me, you know, even the fact that we're having this discussion, you know, I'm just like, you know, dreading the front page tomorrow. So, you know, by passing this, we, you know, let's be brazenly political here. We're sparing ourselves.
We have a reporter here?
No reporter here. Yeah, I think we're all okay.
If we pass this legislation as it is, we are sparing ourselves self-inflicted pain and embarrassment for the near future. And that's really what it comes down to. You know, this provides us with a way out. I take it.
So you want to eliminate the whole thing?
Yes, I would. I would accept this legislation as drafted.
Is there anybody else who would accept the legislation as drafted?
With that one amended.
Yeah.
Well, right. Well, I don't think we have a consensus to go forward.
It's just passing the puck to the future.
That was moving a little fast for me, but if we don't, Pete's point I think is extremely well put. While I like the idea of having a continuing process, because at some point maybe there would be a breakthrough, if we go with this structure, it has the possibility that we would at some point have an honest discussion. So I would be willing to support that.
What about the Rogowski proposal, just delaying it for 2 years?
I wouldn't have a problem with doing that, but in the context of this proposal.
I'm just trying to set the immediate problem, the chair is facing, follow the law.
You don't have to.
Right, this might be just put it off this year, and then we have a lot of time to discuss. I like Vito's approach, you know, because I had the same ideas, you know, set it up permanently, but we just have, we have a very immediate problem right now. So my suggestion is we put, you know, Tom had the language, it's the current law, except it doesn't apply in 2010. And now we all know in 2012, it's going to come back, and we can start discussing it next week or next year or in 2012, and we'll deal with it in 2012.
Do you want to set it up so that it doesn't apply now?
It doesn't apply now, but it's automatic.
The first report would be in 2012?
Well, I wouldn't. I'm not even sure what going
I don't want to have a discussion
I'm not sure
of the
you
commission
have,
now.
It's not going to be on for 2 years.
Well,
why don't we just like spend
it? But
it
will automatically, automatically come up with 2012.
All right. Forget.
A gun would cost more.
Let me suggest that nothing automatically come up down the road. Why don't we just repeal this?
That looks like.
You repeal it, and you now provide the explanation as to what will occur with respect to officer county board salaries down the road. First obvious point, it's being repealed so that there's no necessity of putting this panel together now. It's being repealed, and at some point down the road when the economy improves, we can make a judgment as to whether or not it's an appropriate time to look at any modifications to officer's salary in the cap, but that's down the road. And then we could suggest that, and down the road when this occurs, it'll occur in one of two ways. There'll either be a permanent panel similar to the other advisory boards that help the county put into place that isn't just, you know, haphazardly thrown together and then dismissed in a few months. It's a permanent panel that can develop expertise in the area and look at all of the issues that come up involving compensation going forward. Or it's done on a more automatic way where raises never exceed, and then you could cite some kind of index. But you get off the hook, you make a clear statement that, by the way, we are repealing this mechanism that would force us to put a panel into place now. That is gone, and we will not be taking up any compensation for officers until well down the road, at the earliest, when we start to see the economy in a much healthier state. I think you can get out of that. You can get out of the mess that way.
I'd rather just do Ken's proposal than repeal it.
Well, what's wrong with Marty's proposal?
Mine's a 2-year repeal. But again, if you don't have that trigger,
I think it's
and then 2 years now you can pass it. You can punt it for 2 years.
Out
you
a scenario
keep,
why
you can
get
the
criticized
bill.
For going with the 2-year standing commission. I understood that. I think you also possibly get hit for abolishing this thing.
Yeah. So. Again, yeah, we have one problem.
This proposal prevents.
I'll just go with Ken's then.
This proposal effectively prevents a pay increase ever, because it says you have to do it before July 1
of the year before.
And upon consensus, it's the trigger.
Year.
I don't know when
take
that trigger.
Out the year before.
It'll happen.
You can't change your salary during your term.
Correct, but this says that basically what you're going to do is you're going to have a discussion about a pay raise, either a year before or 2 years before.
In 2010. Right. Then go through an election in 2011 where you'll be beaten up and
exactly.
have to sign
that's what the proposal says.
In order to raise the pay in 2012, which means exactly what you said.
Right. There'll never be a pay raise. So you might as well just repeal the whole thing. Or I think Mr. Rogowski's is the easiest to just say put it off for 2 years and it's not going to apply. We're not going to do anything on pay raises this term. We're out of it. 2 year delay because it's a good law.
Look,
it's a good
we've
approach.
Had so many different approaches today that I think we ought to take Mr. Rogowski's approach and simply
kick it over 2 years.
Just amend the law to say there shall be no compensation commission
this year.
In the year 2010. And I would add, because no changes in compensation are being considered by the Board of Legislature.
So it just starts up again?
Yeah, and then we can consider whether we want
to. We have 2 years to do Vito's plan.
That's fine.
Fine. Mr. Hayden, do you understand? Can we do that?
Sure.
It's a very simple amendment. We just take the existing law and put an amendment. There shall be no compensation commission established for the year 2010. Period. The Board of Legislators is not considering any.
Well, that's a committee report.
Compensation.
Well, that's a committee report.
That's right. Okay.
That's fine.
Everybody.
Yes.
Yeah,
so that's
fine. Can I ask that we now vote on this? Let it be clear so we can look at it.
No. We're going to look and see what it is. Okay. The next item on the agenda, which is a little more substantive, has to do with proposed change.
I'll be back.
In, a proposed local law dealing with the county's ability to exercise its power of eminent domain and its. The sponsors are legislators, Pisano and Abinanti, the majority and minority leaders. So can one of you or both of you, without being repeating each other, splitting it up, or one of you describe the purpose and of this law?
And I'll go first.
33 minutes.
You go first.
All right, give me 3 or 4 minutes. I'll try to do my quick summary. Outside of going to college and studying history, I never really thought it in law school, never thought of eminent domain until it hit me in the face in New Rochelle with the IKEA project. And the way it hit me is quite interesting story you should all hear. On a Saturday morning, someone knocked on my door. And it was a man who lived in the IKEA area where the proposed IKEA was going on the Larchmont-New Rochelle border.
City Park.
City Park neighborhood.
Across the street from
City Park. City Park neighborhood it was called. And he was holding in his hand, which I'll never forget, this is one of the most striking things that happened in my career. He was holding a real estate contract that was given to him from a lawyer from IKEA. And the freaking lawyer from IKEA said, you should really sign this because you'll get a lot more this way because eventually we'll be using eminent domain and you only get the fair market value of your property. This was a senior citizen. It was the guy was blown away. He was so confused. And he didn't know what to do. And he was holding the thing, and he actually had tears in his eye. I'll never forget that. It's like the one thing in my career, it was such an abuse of governmental processes to have this poor man get a lawyer in his doorway on a Saturday morning holding this real estate contract. I'll never forget it as long as I live. So then I started studying the issue and got involved in it and enjoying the group, the citizen group.
Rain.
Thank you, Julie. I would never remember that name.
Westchester residents against IKEA now.
I would never would remember that. Thank you. I ended up getting involved in it. I started learning about the abuses regarding eminent domain, not only in Westchester, but across the country. And I opposed the IKEA project, and it eventually left and didn't happen, thank God.
Thanks to the town of America.
Big help from our neighbors. But also a lot of New Rochellians opposed it, too, on the principle of fairness. Now, my colleague, I'll preempt him, the best quote Tom ever made on this, thought was the following. The government shouldn't be in the business of picking one use of property over another. And that's what happens when IKEA...
One developer over another.
One developer over another or use of property over another. Basically, what governments have done across the country is use eminent domain to take private property for private uses. Condos, shopping malls, etc. As you know, the Supreme Court in the Kelo case said that doesn't violate the Constitution in a 5-4 vote, but the most important language in that opinion, whenever I talk about this, I always point this out. I know my friend John will probably read the opinion now that I said it, but one of the things it said was, this doesn't stop a local government from having a policy that says, We don't believe this is a proper use of eminent domain. You're taking private property for private use. Okay? And so that's when Tom and I, after Kelo, I showed Tom the language of the Supreme Court opinion saying, well, we as a Westchester County can have our own law. We could say Westchester County government, from the legislature on to the county executive, doesn't believe that taking private property for private use is an appropriate use for eminent domain in our county. That's certainly something we could do. And at that time, I was working with Lois Bronze on it, who actually joined with Rain also. Lois and I actually were the speakers at the rally in front of City Hall on this. And when we originally proposed this, we had 9 sponsors. And I know there's always been a lot of support for this law in this chamber. We never had support on the 9th floor. I have not spoken to Rob about this yet, but he wasn't a sponsor. He was a sponsor when he was a legislator to this law, which is quite interesting. Andy Spano never liked the law, and Andy Spano is the only person that ever came out against the law itself. Other people have raised it. My friend, Legislator Rogowski, has raised questions about it, but no one ever came out flat out and said, I'm opposed to this except Andy Spano, which is one of the reasons why it didn't move in the last 6 years. But basically, I am adamantly opposed to the use of eminent domain to take private property for private use. That is something I will never support on this legislature. To be honest with you, I voted for the Port Chester project where it happened. It's the worst vote of my career. I wish I had never done that. When I look back on that vote, I made a mistake. I didn't understand the level of eminent domain use in that proposal. And it's one, I guess all of you maybe have a vote you would like to take back in your careers. That's the vote I would like to take back. I will never vote for again.
And I'll have to drive to the Costco in New Rochelle. I can't go to the one in Portchester.
Well, that's actually not the point. The point is, I'm glad you said that, Marty, because the point is, our law doesn't mean one project doesn't happen, of course. It just means that eminent domain isn't going to be a tool used by developers to take people's private property and manipulate the value of that property. Because let me pose it this way to all of you. If someone came up to you right now and said, I will give you the fair market value of your home, most of us would say, get out of here. I don't want to sell my home. I like my neighborhood. I like my community. I like where I live.
Shoot, today?
I don't know.
Remember, the fair market value of home is dramatically decreased, folks. Remember that. But the point is this. Eminent domain gives a property owner, after lots of calculations through governmental intervention, the fair market value of their property. The bottom line is they don't want to sell. They want to keep their property. And how dare the government intervene and take their property to give it to another private use? That is my view of this thing. I think it's a misuse of the process. I know if someone came up to me today and offered me the fair market value of today's fair market value, or even any time, frankly, I would say, no, I like my street. I like my neighborhood. I don't want to leave.
Okay.
So this law does 2 things in a nutshell. It says that Westchester County government will never use our power, which we do have, of eminent domain to take private property for private use. But more importantly, what this law does, it says that if a developer takes private property for private use under the standards we laid out in the law, that unless there's a 2/3 vote of the county legislature, we will not support any financial contribution to that development.
Unless.
And we've exempted affordable housing, which we could talk about too. One of the reasons we've allowed that to stay in, and we think it probably has to stay in at this point, is the ADC settlement.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that. Yeah. But anyway, Tom?
I would echo what Jimmy has said. I would just add another twist to it. What really bothered me was to watch governments get involved and decide they like one developer better than another. I remember seeing down in New Rochelle where one developer was screaming, saying, hey, look, I bought this property 10 years ago. I invested in it. You're going to give me the fair market value. Well, I bought it for the purposes of making money on it. And now you're going to take it from me at fair market, and you're going to give it to another developer to do exactly the same thing that I was going to do and let him make the money. And I held it all this time, and I'm getting my fair market. I've had losses all this time. How was I going to get compensated for my losses? I was going to get compensated for my losses when I developed the project. So I kept the parcel, I kept it in good shape, I kept it going, and I was going to build, an office building or whatever. Now you're coming in with another developer saying he's going to get the benefit of the profit,
when I did all this work all this time, and I had all these losses keeping the building up, et cetera, et cetera, and what's the difference between his proposal and mine? You like him better. And there's something in that that really bothers me. It seems to me, and it's kind of strange here, Jimmy's talking about the little guy, he's the Republican, and I'm the Democrat talking about the big developer, but that bothers me too, though. I don't think government should be in the business of saying to somebody, I like this guy better than you. Government's in the business of selecting uses and zoning properties. It's not in the business of choosing who should do that. And it really, really bothers me to see governments.
We're saying to an owner, we don't like how you're using your property. We have another developer who wants to come take your property and use it differently.
Right.
How is the government involved in that process?
Let's hear some comments from.
I agree with Mr. Mazzano about that vote because I also voted for the Port Chester project. And somewhere along the way, somewhere along the way, we ought to look and see if we're ever getting paid the money we're supposed to get paid. Now that you raised that subject,
let's have some comments.
The other thing I would say is this legislation was we went over it with a fine tooth comb in the legislation committee way back in 2005. And then we rewrote it several times.
Was drafted by the county attorney or did you guys?
Drafted by us, so it's an interesting point that we
made
after today's meeting, if there's a consensus to move forward to some degree, we may want to send this to the county attorney.
The county attorney's office did it. We rewrote it and sent it to the county attorney.
Did we really?
Let's get some comments.
I've got it in here.
We got to check that.
There's no committee report.
We got to check that.
In 2009, when I thought we were going to have this substantive discussion toward the end of the year, I had that committee council review, as far as we could find, any uses of eminent domain in any scenario that involved not the taking for a road or an obvious public purpose. We were able to find, aside from the IKEA fight, one instance. That was in Austin, where the property was taken in order to facilitate exactly what the...
No, there's several of them.
Okay. I'm just saying what we found. And that was to some waterfront property, an existing building that was being used for a testing plant. It was taken and made part of a redevelopment of the waterfront. Without that taking, the waterfront project would have failed. Without that project, the whole belief that in this case a waterfront community could redevelop itself and make some changes that would benefit the entire community would have been scuttled.
How do you know that? What's your proof of that?
I have
no cross-examination.
So what is your proof of that? How do you know if there was no eminent domain use that they couldn't eventually agree on a price and they could have purchased that property through the fair market the way everyone else does?
The process took approximately 3 years.
Well, how do you know that wouldn't have happened had the government not intervened?
Mr. Lawyer, you can cross-examine, but not yet. Let him make finish his direct examination.
Direct self-examination.
Judge Nona has spoken.
Yeah. What do you got going?
It's a good thing. The lesson I draw from that is two things. The straw man which Tom has put up, which I think is a real straw man, but it is a straw man in the sense that I think it's... perhaps the unique instance of two developers being discriminated against, one or the other getting the deal and the other one not, even though both of them had a piece of it, using the eminent domain process, is such an outlier as to not be, I think, the basis of any decision.
Happened twice recently.
White Plains and
I know Rochelle.
I was
not a straw man. That's not accurate. No, I'm trying for you to be accurate.
Give me a shot.
Not a straw man.
I'm working on what I know, not what you know.
All right. Okay, try to help you out.
Thanks, I really appreciate that, but let me get a shot at doing it my own way. The concern that I have with this, and when I read the legislation when it first came in, I don't think you've changed it. It said that the county would not participate financially in the redevelopment, which I take usually to mean a project such as we have here, let's say with the Hanek Bluestone project over next to the Board of Elections, anything else that would involve IDA funding, for example, those sorts of projects. I think that strikes at the heart of the only way that municipalities have for redeveloping themselves, because otherwise you wind up with a single property owner being able to stymie the redevelopment project. I'm aware of a project in Peekskill right now. I know of the project in Austin. You can walk down 6th Avenue and see an attempt to do this by the owner of an old tenement building around which was built Rockefeller Center. These things happen so often that a single property owner can kill a redevelopment project, which is in the broad public interest of
the community. You have evidence of that? I'd like to see a series of...
In the broad public interest...
Anecdotal evidence of that.
In the broad public interest of the community itself, by its elected and representative leaders, to make a decision for the best interest of the community as a whole. So long as the individual who owns the property has two things going for himself. One, fair market rate compensation. And two, a period of time within which, and in the case of Austin, this was carried over for 3 years, and it's a fair and honest attempt was made to relocate the property owner so that his business would not be wiped out, which was his argument, and has been the argument of a number of people, I believe in Portchester, particularly through
all over the country.
Mr. Reisman has raised the issue that people were displaced who had no place to take their auto body shop or whatever, and I think it's a fair criticism. But I cannot support the idea that communities cannot choose to self-renew in a process which does cause the taking of property for the purpose of rebuilding. To stop this, I think, is to put an end to the ability of communities to self-renew.
We're not stopping.
And for that reason, I would be opposed.
But we're not stopping.
Okay.
The point is, we're not stopping.
I would have been a few minutes earlier, but the legislative
interfered. Question about Kelo. I thought, and I'm not an attorney, but I had thought that the issue there was the definition of private use. No? Yes?
Yeah.
And so what if, and this also goes, I guess, to Legislator Burton's issue, what if private use yields public benefits, which I think was what was behind the whole, the blighting of the City Park area by New Rochelle. They called it a blighted neighborhood, and that led them to be able to have eminent domain there.
Yes.
I thought that their rationale was that in doing this, by bringing IKEA in, or any large developer in, that was going to yield significant sales tax income to New Rochelle, which would yield public benefits.
That is the argument.
That opens the door.
I don't agree with that, but that is the argument. That is the argument.
The problem
is, I don't agree with
that. That opens the door to anything being.
Basically, you can steal any under that rationale. You can steal anybody's property for anything.
You can always steal. You can
always say get sales tax.
Let John answer.
I understand.
Well, by the way, this law does not affect any.
Now, the other thing I had was how much, if in your research when you were doing this, because this just says that Westchester couldn't contribute.
Two things. We won't do it.
How much has Westchester contributed to anything beyond?
We won't do it. And then if someone else, if a local government does it, we're not going to participate by contributing funds.
But how often do we contribute funds?
That was the Portchester situation.
Portchester? Well, I bet you IKEA would have probably asked for some money. They were coming to the county. IKEA had to reach out to the county for financial funding.
Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely.
What do they want, like an IDA?
Yes. The IDA funding, which would involve forgiving sales tax.
Yes.
Sales tax
would then fit into
property.
This.
Right?
No, sales tax.
Marty, why didn't we get involved in Mount Vernon? Across the street from Memorial Field?
Same, yes, eminent domain was used on that project.
Same construction company, guys that had their businesses. I just wanted to let people know.
But what was the use? The
that was for that field? The mall on Sanford Boulevard.
No, it was for the mall where Tarjay went in and people who
yeah, it helps me. I don't know where I stand on this.
Peter,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks to Jim and Tom for bringing this forward. I certainly support it. You know, the thing that I think of when we think of this is that we're a county and a state that believe in home rule. And, when I think of this, I would go one step further, and you may be shocked to hear me say this, but I would take out the exemption for affordable housing, and I'll tell you why. Any affordable housing that I built was built in communities where we earned support for the project. I would never have ventured politically or personally to try to build affordable housing that was done through eminent domain. We already have in the county a very good way of acquiring land, funding land, and construction. In fact, we had a very very fruitful discussion this morning on 72 units of up in Somers. Something that's gone through local planning, something that's gone through local zoning. You know, and the thing that I'm hearing from communities is people are willing to help with the settlement, but they're petrified that they're going to lose control of their communities, of their zoning, and of their planning. So, again, it may sound strange coming from an affordable housing advocate, but I would go a step further than what Jim and Tom here, and I would take out paragraph C that has the exemption for affordable housing, because to your point about the settlement, we do have a mechanism where we buy land. We do the dollar deals. We do the swaps. We have the New Homes Land Acquisition Fund, but it's only after it's gone through the local zoning and planning approvals process. So in order to preserve that local feel, and just in terms of expediency, I think we as a county, if we go in and try and do affordable housing through eminent domain, wherever it is, wherever you are, that's going to be tied up in court for 30 years. I mean, we really have to take the knowledge that we have that the best way to do it is on the ground, build grassroots support, you know, go through the planning and the zoning process. So my suggestion would be to take out this subparagraph C. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I thought people wanted that.
Mr. Chair, were I to support my good friend over there, Mr. Mezzato and Mr. Abernathy, I think I would go along with Mr. Harkin. I think if the rationale, what you guys want to do, makes sense. Tom, no. The rationale of what you guys stand for, I think Pete's right. It is or it isn't. So I would support Pete's approach. However, it seems to me, and Mr. Burton was moving very much in my direction, and somehow we don't always go that way, but I think Bill is on point. I think we have to. Jim mentioned early on that he spoke at the rallies. I think it's good that we're now 2 years, or whatever it is, past the rallies, because this came up.
Many, many,
a long time ago.
Well, IKEA goes back here. So this came up. It came up in a political climate, and sometimes it's good, many times it's not good when government reacts to a political situation. I mean, Keogh, I mean, a lot of this reaction was the Keogh. The IKEA thing was, but the Supreme Court decision was really promoted, which isn't that many years ago, promoted the stuff. So try to take the politics out. Tom gave you several examples. You know, there's all, you know, all these things. It's dangerous to pass legislation in response to specific abuses and in response because, you know, we got a good applause at the rally. And sit back and under the measure.
Haven't we
time,
done that?
Yeah, well, we
so
good.
About 8 years later.
So now, that's right. Well, so now
I think we've
done
that. It's 10.
So now,
10 years
so now later. We can look at this in a rational, reasonable approach and you know, come to a conclusion as to which way to go. Because there's certainly, you know, you have a system in place, and there certainly can be abuses. You know, so just because there's an abuse to a process, it doesn't mean you get rid of the process. You try to get rid of the abuses. And you can start with the Supreme Court, and there's lay out certain protections and blight, and there's been lawsuits on what does blight mean. And, you know, the Supreme Court basically kept the law in place. What Keogh really did was we had a law and basically didn't change it. A lot of people thought, oh, my God, look at the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court kept the law that's been on the books for 200 years.
Well, I don't believe
in
that.
Place. Well, that's
that I don't believe.
All right, let's not debate you. But that's pretty much what I recall it did. I can basically agree that the use of eminent domain should be, you know, last resort and follow very strict blight and all the criteria that are out there. So I'm not a proponent of eminent domain. But I don't want to be pushed by abuses to it. And someone, I think you asked for an example. I can just point to Times Square. The Times Square you see today would not be there. It would probably still be all the peep shows, but for eminent domain. So I take a holistic approach. I see eminent domain as a bullet in the holster, as a weapon, hopefully never to be used. But if it's used once every 100 years or 50 years or 10 years, with all the protections and the hearings, at the end of the day, it's a political decision, the legislative branch. We have to make those decisions to use it, so it's always the opportunity to say no, but to just take
that weapon out of our arsenal and say we shall never use it, the time squares of the centuries will miss the opportunity to do that. It seems to me that as much as I believe in God knows private property ownership as one who's made a living there, to Bill's point, you have private ownership, and certainly that has a lot of indicia of control, and it's mine and all that. But I think, in a holistic way, over being stewards of the earth, that we start talking about sustainable communities and long-term communities, that there may just come a point where, whether it's waterfront development or the Times Square development, that at some point, my right to say, you know what, I bought it and I have all these lists of the Bill of Rights and ownership, and it's true, there's a lot there. But there may just be in the macro picture some greater authority that for the benefit, it's usually, you know, for the larger community, whether it's on the waterfront or it's something that just, you know what, that Times Square, that person right in the middle just doesn't want to sell. It's a free country. I'm not selling. And to give up for the entire, you know, metropolitan region, like you come back to the Times Square area, not to have that. Or for maybe Port Chester, not to have a certain waterfront development. And yes, you first go
through. You know how many parcels were taken in eminent domain in Times Square? Do you know?
Well, maybe it was only,
you know?
It was time, the Times Square, the New York Times building. But no, let's say it was just
looking for evidence of your arguments.
Well, no, at least one. Okay, there was a lot of eminent. I think it was a lot of eminent domain.
Just curious.
There was a lot of eminent domain. But the point is, rather than us limiting, taking this bullet off the table for even future governments, if the proposal came up next week, this legislature, 2010, we can say, you know what? We don't agree with eminent domain. We're not going to vote on it. Certainly going to the IDAs and the municipalities, whether it was Port Chester or Austin, for us, you know, to reach in, first, all they'll do is set up their own IDA. I mean, if it's a question, it's the county IDAs, what's going to stop them? They'll say, well, you have all this consolidation of services, but you know what? We're going to do this for the benefit of our community, and if the county won't participate through the IDA, we'll set up our own IDA. So it's not going to stop it. It's just going to create some more paperwork. But again, my big picture is, why? Politics aside,
no.
Standing at the rally, whether it's just looking at Central, in a different way. If New York City hadn't bought Central Park and protected that, you'd have a whole different Manhattan. If eminent domain is needed once every 50 years, why take it off the table? So big picture, to Bill's point about larger benefit in the community, as strongly as I support private ownership, it may be in the scheme for the next 100 years. If I've owned a piece of property for 100 years, maybe it is time for the next 100 years for sustainability, and as things change over hundreds of years, it's time to move a community, a county, in a new direction. And if that's there, and there's blight and all the other reasons, you just can't do it. All those other legal reasons are there, leave it on the table. That's my
thing. I would like to get my two cents in as the chair, and then you could speak again, because we're getting close to 3 o'clock and we have an appointments committee meeting. And Alfredo wants to be heard, too? Well, you haven't spoken yet, Alfredo.
I haven't spoken yet.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. Well, I can defer to the chair.
No.
No, I tend to agree with Bill. I think that there are instances where it's important to be able to use eminent domain as a tool in terms of situations of blight and that kind of thing. I think the having a supermajority would be a good kind of thing to have in the law when there's a question about where it goes and how we go about doing this and whether we should do it or not. But I do agree that sometimes it's necessary.
So just some thoughts and maybe where we go, and then Tom, I'll give you a chance.
Well, I just wanted to very briefly respond.
Quick.
I think I understand what Bill is talking about, self-renewal, and what Legislator Myers was talking about, Legislator Burton and Legislator Myers was talking about with public benefits. But you got to look at the language of the law, because we consider these issues. And what we said a public use was, one was the obvious parcel of land used by the general public. But we also said that public use, that you could use this, that you could use condemnation, eminent domain, to acquire property to cure a harmful effect of the current use of the land, including removal of public nuisances, structures that are beyond repair and unfit for human habitation and use, and also to acquire abandoned property. So we kind of looked at what is really blight.
Tom, you'll end up in the Supreme Court. There's a Supreme Court law on this. You're right. You're trying to write things. This law will be in the Supreme. It'll go right up to the Supreme Court.
We are not regulating others.
Why do you think that?
Because
Tom,
that's ridiculous. That's what the Supreme Court decision says.
No,
read it.
Hold on a second. There is a discussion in the United States Supreme Court and the other decisions that talk about what is blight. We are for our own purposes. We're not dealing with local governments here. We're not controlling anybody else. We're setting a standard which would avoid that discussion in court. Because we're setting a standard that says this is when we'll use it, this is when we won't, and we try to set a standard that so that you can renew a community, but not just a discretionary renewal of the community, a real need for a renewal in the community. Now, we could have a debate in this committee if we want to change this standard, but I really do believe that we should have a standard for our actions. And now point two, what this does is it puts it in the lap of the Board of Legislators. Today, I don't know who's got the right to use eminent domain and how we get there with Westchester County and how we participate and which programs can be used to fund projects that are where there's eminent domain elsewhere. This is saying if the county is going to in any way be involved with eminent domain or a project that uses eminent domain, it's got to come to the Board of Legislators for discussion.
That's okay.
And it requires a two-thirds
that's
vote.
What the law does.
So there's
that's
two things that it does. Okay. One, it gives it to the Board of Legislators, and two, it sets standards. Now, once we accept this concept, we can then discuss what the standards should be. And if you think these standards are too tight, well, then we can talk about it. We can loosen the standards a little bit. That's
okay.
All I wanted to
Thanks.
Say.
Thanks. Just a few observations and maybe a suggestion for going forward. Number one, this issue has come up in New York State with the Atlantic Yards decision by the New York Court of Appeals, which is a 6-1 decision. And the issue that comes up there has to do with the definition of blight.
How you define blight?
The fact that it's kind of been overused. I'm going to suggest that we provide the committee with this report, Building Empires, Destroying Homes, which is a review of what at least one group believes has been the abuse of eminent domain in New York. So we can make that part of the record. So we'll get that copy. So that's some of the backdrop is we ought to look at the Atlantic Yards decision. Secondly, I think we should refer to the county attorney to just look it over for any issues. And Mr. Hayden and I have two particular issues. Section 24, subdivision 2D seems to say that if we change any provision relating to the exercise of power of condemnation subject to a permissive referendum, we ought to know.
What law is that?
The Municipal Home Rule Law.
Municipal Home Rule Law.
And then there's a section that may be more problematic, Section 34.3G of the Municipal Home Rule Law says that except in accordance with or consistent with laws enacted by the legislature, the state legislature, a county charter or charter law shall not contain provisions relating to the subdivision G lists the number of laws and says eminent domain procedure law. So I don't know.
Well, we're not dealing with procedure.
I don't know. We ought to look at it.
We did look at that, John, and we thought that since we're only dealing not with the process of eminent domain, but what county government spends its own money, that wouldn't be a problem. But we certainly should have looked at it. That's fine.
It's the policy question.
And then the next thing is...
John, the first one, by the way, all that requires is that we put it on the ballot. And that's not a bad thing to let voters vote.
Well, it's by petition, so it's I think
right, it's not a bad thing.
But I just would like to confirm that it would be subject to a permissive referendum. And then one issue I have is, and you may consider this, is we say we're prohibited from using powers of eminent domain to condemn private property for private use. That's already against the law. You're not allowed to condemn private property for private use.
No, it's not.
There have been abuses, and that's a debate.
No, I don't think that's true, John. Why do you think that? It's done all the time.
Well, it is, but private is
well,
private.
Well, it depends on how you define
that's
it.
That's kilo.
That's
all kilos about.
Well, but if it's 1 acre out of 1,000 acres, that 1 acre, there's private use.
You can use eminent domain to take private property for private use. Of course you could.
Private use means use by a private party or ownership by a private party for a...
It's a public...
John, that Atlantic Yards.
Private
Yards
is for public benefit.
Yeah, that's...
benefit's going to come out of it.
Of course you can.
It's a public
benefit. But private use, it's going to a private person.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what we're saying.
And what Judy was saying before was the reason for it because it's a public benefit as opposed to a public use. And we're trying to get away from that.
Yeah, we don't agree with that.
I'm saying the Supreme Court
is being developed by private developers.
Mm-hmm. Right. You've got to look at our definitions
very carefully. You're saying there will be a public use by the recreation of that section.
Okay, no, your definitions may take care of it. Definitions.
This is all about definitions. This is all about definitions.
And so I think we've got to schedule a meeting with any potential people that might want to comment on this. Like, well, we want to report back from the county attorney. Maybe we should have the administration come and see if they have any view.
Sure.
I think the Urban Land Institute would have.
Whatever.
Anybody wants to come in?
Any stakeholders. The IDA.
Bruce Ratner.
The IDA.
Right.
Bruce Ratner.
And also the Westchester Municipal Officials Association.
Right. John, one final quick comment. I certainly would agree and support some language saying, you know, if and whenever it happens, it's the Board of Legislators that does it, so make that clear.
Which is one of the compromises we put in, Marty, right, based on other meetings where we discussed this.
So I would support that, but in that light, once we establish ourselves as the decision makers, understand what we're doing, we're saying, and for future boards as well as ourselves, we'll make that decision in the future, but we're going to prohibit ourselves from ever doing it. I mean, that's a judgment that we can do. We're not passing a ban on someone else.
No.
We're sort of banning ourselves. It's like, you don't trust ourselves to make that decision.
Because the exigencies of a particular project override the general principles that everybody says they adhere to.
No, but again, we are the decision maker.
That's the problem we have.
Well, we're the decision maker. You're still saying we don't trust ourselves to make the decision. And I'm saying I will trust ourselves.
The other two other questions I have is, is there a consensus to take out Section C?
I think we need to talk about that more. Maybe we want to also let the county attorney see if there's any ADC impact on that. We're open to that.
And that has to do with Section 644.04C.
That was the bronze proviso.
Right.
She wanted that in there.
He needs to keep that in for because of the settlement. And finally, the private right of action, what was the thinking?
And John, by the way, just so you know, with these affordable housing, there is a provision in here somewhere that says that the Board of Legislators also has to make a determination that it is, in fact, affordable housing and does, in fact, fit certain standards. Because we didn't just want some private developer to come in and say, well, I'm going to give you a couple of units of affordable housing and now I'm going to condemn it. We have it in here somewhere. I'm trying to remember where it was. we'll find
it. What about the private cause of action?
That was Tom's idea.
Oh, he ducked that one pretty fast.
Yes, it was very good. I believe that that individuals sometimes want to enforce a law and should be able to enforce a law that a government just decides not to enforce. They just look the other way.
We would have to vote on eminent domain. So if we voted it down, it wouldn't happen.
Correct.
If you voted it up, you want to give someone the right to sue. What would they sue for?
Well, no. But what if you have a circumstance where one of our agencies participates in a project that we don't even know about?
Okay. They got to come across for money.
But we don't know. But no, there are various funding streams. There are monies that come through the county that we never get to handle.
Well, the IDA is the classic example. All of the redevelopment projects in some form or another show up in the IDA's records. So there's your perfect example of this matter.
And this gives us a chance to have some control over the IDA that's out there doing its own thing.
It gives an individual
giving away our tax dollars
the right to sue the IDA on not anything functional, but on the fact of the use of eminent domain. That's what that...
Correct. Okay, because right now, if we set this policy, it then becomes self-effectuating. We don't have to bring the lawsuit.
No, this is a little bit like the ADC.
I'd like the county attorney to give us an opinion of whether to have a private
But, John, this is also designed for the circumstances where there may be a funding stream that we don't control and it gets used by the county for a project that is condemnation, and we don't even know about it. And so we're in a conflict situation. We tell the county, we then have to get a two-thirds vote or a majority vote to instruct the county attorney to sue the county. I mean, you get these circumstances where, you know, the county attorney then has to represent the agency that spent the money. Might have been the county executive who spent the money. And so who's going to bring the lawsuit?
Yeah,
could I have 1 minute and then we'll summarize this and we can finish?
But we'll look at that. I mean, that's on the table.
I think Legislator Williams hit something. She explained my own law better than I did. To Bill, this applies to your issues you raised as well.
Yes, go ahead.
We've gone through several meetings over 6 years in this committee. We modified this a lot based on legislative comments and put exactly like the things you said. That's why we put in the two-thirds. We didn't do the blanket ban.
Right.
We basically, you hit it right on the nose. So we've compromised, and we're always open to if somebody thinks we should change something, tell us.
There was never a public hearing on this, right?
No, never a public hearing.
Was there public?
We've had meetings in legislation committee three times over 6 years.
Public participation, with never
come out. A couple of people came in, and some people came in to comment in the legislation committee, but we never had a public hearing, which I think is very healthy on this issue.
That's why.
Yeah.
So next week, we're going to try to get in with the stakeholders.
So, that, I just wanted to say that the things that Marty raised, the thing that Bill raised, that's why we left it. We didn't make a blanket ban for these very things that you raised. We have a two-thirds requirement in because of the issues you raised. But I would like to have the county attorney look at it, and I would like to have a public hearing.
We'll look at putting this on in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
On the votes we took at Portchester, Mount Vernon, were they strictly 9-8 votes or 12?
They were supermajority because we bonded the contribution.
So
it's pretty similar to what we're doing already. Changes things that much.
Well, I just want to bring that up because it was
it's a good point.
Part of that decision.
We have 2 minutes. Sets of minutes.
I move. Second.
Your second. All in favor?
Aye.
So, has 2 weeks left, right? That's all.
2 weeks.
Well, I'm putting this on. We can do 2 items.
Good. Thank you. Appreciate everybody's comments. Sorry that I acted like a lawyer. I can't help myself.
Hey, we had a case when I had my small firm where we were trying to evict a lawyer who was a tenant, so we had a trial in court. So I sent a senior associate related to the partner, sharp guy. The lawyer gets on the witness stand and starts talking. And our lawyer, the guy from my firm I sent down to try this, says, wait, I object. He can't just talk. He's got to ask questions. So the judge made him ask himself questions.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Lawyer. Well, Mr. So-and-so, what did you do next? Well, I did this. You made him do that.
We lawyers can't help ourselves. I'll tell you a quick lawyer story. I'll tell everybody a quick lawyer story. I did a trial once where a partner sat with me. And the partner was sitting next to me and says, all right, this is your day. I want you to run the show. You're in charge. I'm not going to say a word. We start the case. They begin to answer the first series of questions to the first witness. And the partner next to me goes, objection! He couldn't help himself. He could not sit there next to me and not jump up and say something.
This falls, Jim, into the category, I think, of the scorpion and the turtle. And
absolutely.
The turtle. Yes.
Perfect. Perfect.
Adios.
Bye-bye. Thank you for your strong legislator, Harcum. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Moser.
Thank you. I need all you guys to support this. Bill, we got to talk more. Offer compromises. Offer compromises, Bill.
I don't think so. I'm just waiting for the next one. But we'll see.